So supplier selection and development. Most suppliers are chosen based on a combination of the following factors, although some may be selected to meet the government-mandated quotas over other qualified suppliers. So in certain areas, the government has also mandated the selection of rural suppliers. So you're forced to, buy certain, quantities or amounts from these cottage industries or, the village industries, etc. So proven history of achieving cost competitiveness and delivering projects on schedule. So this is one of the selection criteria which could be used for selection of the supplier. Possession of unique capabilities exclusive to the company. I know of companies, which have mastered the art of natural colors. So instead of using synthetic colors for textile dyes, etc., they make dyes out of naturally available herbs and plants, flowers, etc. And this falls under the category of unique capabilities exclusive to the company and demonstrated expertise in managing operations effectively. So many of these organizations are capable of managing their operations very effectively, very professionally, and provide exclusive service. In fact, we used to source some materials in one of my earlier organizations from these rural industries, which were based on milk product, casein, and we found the quality of these products to be extremely good, even better than some of the people in the urban areas. So this could be some of the selection criteria. Strong customer support and efficient logistics capabilities. I mean, self-explanatory. Extensive focus on maintaining high quality performance. So again, I give the example of the supplier who used to supply casein, and they used to maintain the highest quality, one of the best, in fact. Commitment to develop seamless processes and eliminating unnecessary activities between customer and supplier. And this is where I think many organizations play a role by eliminating any middlemen. So seamless processes which don't add cost, processes which add value, and they eliminate any unnecessary activities between the supplier and the customer. Alignment of corporate cultures for smooth collaboration. So naturally, the values and the cultures need to align between the organizations. Established financial stability and profitability. That means the organization is financially stable and they are profitable. Competitive technology and efficient processes. Here again, the buying organization can support them in further improving upon the technology and the efficiency of the processes. But this is possibility to bring about these competitive technology and process efficiency is one of the important criteria. Adherence to government regulations and compliance. So in terms of how they carry out the operations, disposal of their waste or effluent, etc. So these need to adhere to the government regulations or the local regulations. Senior management's dedication to attaining a sustainable competitive advantage in the supply chain. So the dedication of the supplier organization also should play a major role. There has to be a hunger for the organization to become sustainable and competitive while supplying the product or services. Willingness to share the benefits achieved through integrating the supply chain. So it has to be a transparent operations, and the benefits can be shared by both the organization, the supplier and the buyer organization. Coming to the negotiation tactics. So let's look at some of the negotiation tactics which can be used or are being used in the rural setup, or these are very general. They are used all across the industry. Negotiation tactics refer to the strategies or methods employed to sway the results of a negotiation. These tactics can differ based on the objectives, circumstances, and dynamics between the parties engaged in the negotiation. So, what is the objective, whether it's a win-win, circumstances, whether you are in a buyer's market, you are a seller's market, the dynamics, again, whether you are in a buyer's market, seller's market, what are the compulsions of the buyer, what are the compulsions of the seller. So, all these things matter, which decide what are the tactics which are engaged in the negotiation. The following outlines various categories of negotiation tactics that are frequently utilized. So these are some of the tactics. Let's go through them one by one. So distributive negotiation techniques, or this is also known as the win-lose methodology. So the first tactic is anchoring. Establishing an initial proposal or demand that acts as a benchmark for the negotiating process. So you are making a proposal that becomes a benchmark for all further negotiation process. So you are sometimes, you know, you are inflating your demand, trying to get to the lowest price that the supplier can quote, and then you try to hold him down to that, although you are not going to buy that kind of a volume. Low ball, high ball. Initiating with an offer that is significantly lower or higher than the anticipated value. So what you do is, if you are a seller, you start with a very low value, and then there are various hidden costs which you keep on adding to it and you come up with. The other end is where you start with a very high value, you quote a very high value, and then lower your proposal. These, of course, don't come under the collaborative approach. Nibbling, requesting minor additional concessions after the primary agreement has been reached, often when the other party is already invested in the deal. So you have reached a deal, you have decided to buy or sell, and the buyer will then try to get additional concessions or get additional features free of cost. So this is called nibbling. That means you have first agreed to buy, you have fixed the price, and then without changing the price, you try to get more and more features, more and more concessions. So this is what we call as nibbling. Good cop, bad cop. So one negotiator adopts a stringent stance, he becomes the bad cop, while the other presents a more accommodating and reasonable demeanor, he becomes the good cop, aiming to exert pressure on the opposing party. So sometimes this kind of a thing, you know, a hot and cold treatment is used to kind of pressure a seller into submission, you know, and accept an offer or make an offer which he is not totally happy with. So basically all these techniques will leave one party feeling that he is a loser. So it is not a win-win strategy, it's a win-lose strategy. Take it or leave it. Offering a final ultimatum that allows no flexibility for negotiation to compel the opposing party to accept the proposal. And we have seen this number of times that organizations will tell you that, well, I'm getting this product for this price. So if you want to sell, this is the price. Otherwise, sorry, we are not interested. So this is a take it or leave it. That means either as a seller, you say that this is my price, you want it, take it or leave it. Or as a buyer, you may say this is my price, you take my offer, I mean you agree to my terms and conditions, else we are off. So this is another of those win-lose kind of a tactics. Coming to the next one, the integrative negotiation tactics, or what we call as the collaborative approach. So here it's a relationship development, prioritizing the establishment of a sustainable relationship and collaboration over immediate gains. So you're not looking at immediate gains, you're not looking at buying at the lowest price, but you are willing to invest in the party, give them inputs for development, establish transparency, you are willing to be fair with them and develop them over a period of time. Value expansion, identifying opportunity to enhance the overall value or scope of the negotiation, enabling both parties to gain. So you are, let's say, negotiating for supply of one material, but you say that, okay, I mean, we can also give you additional business. You can also supply this, or you can also supply some other material. So you are giving them a scope for a bigger participation so that they can make an offer which is beneficial to both of them. So both parties gain in the process. Joint benefit strategy, pursuing solutions that address the interest and needs of both the parties. So here, again, you're looking at what are the needs of both the parties, and you are trying to find a solution by which both the parties are happy and both have achieved their objective. Information sharing, engaging in open communication and providing pertinent information to the other party to cultivate trust and promote collaborative behavior. That means you are being transparent, you are sharing information which will help the other party improve their operations, improve their offerings, and build trust, and also have a collaborative venture where both of you gain in the process. So I mean, you are sharing the gains, whatever come from the collaboration. Issue trading, making concessions on matter that hold greater significance for one party while being of lesser importance to the other. So let us say that there is one party for whom the money matters more, in the sense that they don't have working capital. So you can promise them, let's say, advance payment, so that their working capital issues are resolved, whereas they make you an offer in terms of price and give you a price which is on the lower side. So it serves your purpose of trying to get the product at the most competitive price. So here, what matters to both the parties, you try and satisfy those conditions. So it's not necessary that the other party wants to sell at the higher price and you want to buy at the lowest price. What you're looking for, the significance can be different for different party. And what is important to both the parties can be slightly different. So both can be satisfied, and this can result in a win-win. Tactical concessions. So strategy of concessions, implementing minor concessions to foster a sense of reciprocity. So what happens is that, when you're negotiating, you may not agree to every point, but there has to be certain amount of concessions that you make. So on things which don't really matter to you, or they are not that important, you can make certain concessions to basically indicate that there is a reciprocal concession that you're willing to make for every concession that the other party is making. So this is where you are making concessions to put other party into a comfort zone and make them feel that they are also gaining in the process. So if they are making a concession, you making a concession makes them feel it's a fair kind of a negotiation. Pattern of concessions. So initiating negotiations with smaller or fewer concessions and progressively offering more substantial ones towards the conclusion. This could be one of the tactics, where you start with small concessions and then you make a slightly bigger or larger concessions. Conditional concessions, proposing a concession contingent upon the other party providing one in return. So like, for example, you're discussing the price and one of the party is asking for a price which is on the lower side. So a contingent or conditional concession could be that if you place a order, that means every consignment that I supply has to be minimum of this quantity. Because by doing so, maybe the supplier is saving on cost, maybe the logistics cost or even the transactional cost, the cost of managing the consignment, etc. So that could be one of the conditional concessions, or they could be, you know, tying it up with the payment terms and say that, okay, if you make the payment within 15 days, I can offer you this kind of a price. So these are all conditional concession. It could be tied with your payment terms, can be tied with your volumes, the total volume that you buy. So these are conditional concessions. Emotional tactics. So emotional appeal, leveraging emotional connections to persuade the opposing party, such as eliciting feelings of sympathy, guilt, or enthusiasm. So this approach can be particularly potent in negotiations that are personal or centered around core values. So I have, you know, personally faced this kind of a situation where people have said, you know, that, oh, I'm willing to make concessions. I'm basically an artist. I'm not a businessman. So I want that I have a good tenant. And for that, I'm willing to, you know, give it to you, although you are paying a lesser rent, this kind of a situation. Strategic silence, choosing to remain silent following an offer or statement. These tactics can induce discomfort, compelling the other party to react or to bridge the silence with concessions or alternative proposals. So many times you find that a party makes a proposal. So they say, okay, this is what I can offer. And suppose you don't react, you remain silent. And let me tell you, silence can be a very big negotiation tactic. The other party feels that maybe you are not totally in agreement and they may not be able to clinch the deal with the proposal they have made. So in that case, and mind you, silence can actually breed discomfort. So you may find that the other party will say something or make further concessions and say, okay, we'll further sweeten it by saying, okay, we'll give you this, or we'll further reduce it by so much. So strategic silence is also one of the negotiation tactics, the emotional tactics. Deceptive positioning, simulating a stronger or weaker stance than one actually holds to sway the decision of the other party. This may involve inflating demands or exaggerating potential repercussions. It can be something like, you know, in deceptive positioning, you can indirectly threaten, you know, by saying that, oh, if you miss out on this deal, then, you know, we have future projects coming. And then in that case, you will be at a disadvantage. As far as the inflating of the, you know, stance or stronger or weaker stance, etc., there you are inflating the demand. That means you want to buy 1,000 pieces, but you say, what will you offer if I take 10,000 pieces? You are also trying to find out what is the minimum price, the lowest price that the supplier is trying to offer. So this could be one of the negotiation tactics, though not fair. And I know because when people use this kind of a tactics, and when we are at the receiving end, we tell them that, okay, this is the price I can offer, provided you are going to place a one-time order and it cannot be changed. So if you change the order, my price will change. So if you place an order for 10,000 pieces, this is the price. He'll say, no, but first I want to try your supply and I'm going to place order for 1,000 pieces. Then we say that, okay, for 1,000 pieces, my price will not be the same. So when you place an order for 10,000 pieces, that is the time we will give you this particular price. So these are also, again, some of the tactics which can be used. Assertive pressure, adopting an excessively forceful or confrontational demeanor to coerce the other party into making concessions. This may manifest through verbal pressure or intimidating body language. So This particularly happens, you know, when there is a negotiation of hostages, etc. Even there is a very nice book on negotiation by, if I'm not mistaken, it is one Mr. Cohen, Bert Cohen or so. The name of the book is You Can Negotiate Anything, where he has given the example of how a person throws up a tantrum and removes his shoe and throws a shoe, etc. It's basically a more of dramatics, but they kind of put a pressure on the other party to make concessions, you know, by showing this kind of a intimidating body language. Psychological tactics, foot in the door technique. So initiating with a minor request that is easily accepted, followed by progressive larger request. So this approach establishes a pattern of compliance, facilitating agreement to more significant demand. So you start with simple things which the other party will agree to. And once the other party is already invested in it and he has made up his mind to grab the business or conclude the negotiation, then you ask for bigger concessions or compliance. So, because what happens is, you know, once a person has bought into a negotiation, then he doesn't want to back down. He has already invested enough time, effort, emotions into it. So he doesn't want to then leave it at that. So he will make some more concessions and he will comply with the additional demands. The other technique is door in the face tactic. Commencing with the inflated request, anticipating refusal, and then subsequently presenting a more reasonable request. So you start with something which is impossible, which other person will not agree. And then you make a smaller request, which the other person will say that, oh, that's not that bad, that's not that difficult, and he will agree to you. So the smaller request tends to appear more palatable after the larger one has been declined. So this is another tactics, you know, for negotiation. Framing effect, conveying information in a manner that affects perceptions, such as portraying a deal as an exceptional opportunity or the optimal choice. How negotiation terms are presented can influence the perceived value for both parties. So I have personally seen this kind of situation being presented to the party opposite to us, where we actually gave them the options and we showed them the consequences, that if they took the offer that we were offering, they stood to gain, and if they did not take our offer, they stood to lose, and the party agreed. So I mean, we got a very good deal with this I would say tactic. But your framing has to be genuine, because, you know, the other party, I mean, they are equally intelligent. So they do understand. It's a matter of conveying a particular perception, making them look at the thing from your viewpoint, which has to be understood by them as well. Psychological tactics, scarcity principle, indicating that an offer or opportunity is limited to or time sensitive, to instill a sense of urgency. These tactics can prompt the other party to make quicker decisions. You must have seen that even on e-commerce platform, when you're looking at an item, they'll say only two items left. When you are booking a flight ticket, they will tell you only two seats are left. So basically they bring in a sense of urgency, and you feel, if I make a delay, I will lose the opportunity. That means the flight will be full and I will not get the ticket on this particular flight. So this is where the scarcity principle is used. Second one is social proof principle. So leveraging examples or endorsement from others, such as previous clients or colleagues, to sway the other party's decision by demonstrating that similar choices have been made by others. One example of this, again, is the review. So when you look at the e-commerce, there are so many people who write reviews. Now, generally, when you're looking at certain products where reviews are written by 1,000 people, you can imagine that they are reviews written by, you know, people who have really bought the product. But you will find at times that there are products which are bought by only 10 people. And you will find that all the reviews are very, very good. Now here, what they do is, they will have friends or associates write the review which are favorable. And people who read the review will think that, oh, the product is very good. It's got a very high rating. It has got very good acceptance. The other thing is testimonials. So a lot of service providers will take testimonials from the client. And they will basically portray that our services are the best. And the clients are satisfied with our services. So this actually prompts the people to say, oh, they are a little expensive, but I think their services are very good. A lot of people have given good testimonials to them. And they may actually choose the closing tactics. So when you are actually in a negotiation, ultimately you need to close the deal where you come to a agreement from both the sides and you have to put a final seal on the deal. So what are the tactics used here? Assumptive close. So this technique involves behaving as though an agreement has already been reached, and you start using phrases like, when can we finalize the details? So this approach subtly encourages the other party psychologically to agree without a direct request for the deal. So you are mentally, you know, kind of goading him into saying that, oh, the deal is almost done. So now tell me, I mean, we have already finalized the commercials. Let's start working on the details, on the technical details, etc. Mentally, you are preparing them into submission. That means you are preparing to close the deal. Takeaway clues. This strategy entails indicating a willingness to withdraw an offer if the other party fails to make a timely decision. Such a tactics can instill a sense of urgency and the fear of missing out. So this is the example we said of only two pieces left or only two seats left. So what you're doing is you are actually saying, take it or this will not be available. Even in a negotiation, many times people say, look, this is the best we can offer. We cannot go any way below this. It's not feasible. We can't afford it. So take your decision. You have time till tomorrow. The offer will not be valid after tomorrow. Even in the B2B selling, many times we make an offer and we tell them that this price is valid only till X date. That means it's valid till tomorrow, day after, whatever. It basically puts some kind of a pressure. Also, it means that the offer is not indefinitely valid. There is a time limit, there is a validity to the offer. So this falls under that category. Trial clues. So this method involves assessing the other party's readiness to proceed by posing a question or suggesting minor components of the agreement, thereby evaluating their response and willingness to move forward. So here you are actually testing the readiness of the other party to, you know, whether they want to close the deal or not. I really can't think of a question right now, though I can relate with this particular tactic. So you are testing them by saying that, so how do we go about, or what do you think about it? What more do you think will, you know, make this deal sweet for you or make you close this deal? So that will tell you what more they are looking for and whether they are ready to close it or not. Because suppose they say that, oh, only the payment terms is one of the issue, you know, I mean, if you could make the payment term, then it tells you that if you make that concession, you can close the deal, because then you can hold them to it and you say, okay, fine, we are giving you the payment terms, can we seal the deal now? So that's a trial close. closing tactics, the silent close. So following the presentation of the final offer, remaining silent allows the other party the opportunity to reflect on the information provided and potentially arrive at a decision without additional pressure. So this is the same thing as we looked at the silent treatment we saw in the earlier tactics. Only difference is this is at the close. So when you're making a final presentation and you are giving them all the features, etc., the benefit to the customer, and at the end of it, you just keep silence and you let the customer do the talking. So this is the silent close. Power and leverage tactics. BATNA. BATNA is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So understanding and utilizing your optimal alternative if the negotiation does not succeed. A robust BATNA enhances your negotiating leverage and empowers you to disengage in the terms are not advantageous. So what you do is, in BATNA, before you go for the negotiation, you look at what is the best price that you'd like to have and what is the minimum price that you're willing to settle for, below which you will back out. That means you will not enter into understanding or agreement. And this is not only for the price, it will also be for the other commercial terms. So you negotiate, but if you're not getting your minimum requirement that you expect from the negotiation, then you back out. You don't enter into the agreement. So it's then up to the other party to agree to the bare minimum that you're willing to settle for, or you don't have an agreement, or you don't have a clause. Engagement of experts. Involving third-party specialists or consultants to substantiate your position or lend authority to your argument. This approach enhances credibility and intensifies pressure on the opposing party. So even when there are hostage situations, you know, hostage negotiations, etc., there are certain professional negotiators who actually are brought in to negotiate. They can play psychological games where they can buy time, they can ensure there is no harm to the hostages, and they can buy time. You can also have certain industry specialists whom you can bring in for the negotiation and who can vouch for the technology that you're offering or the features that your product offers. So, because they are experts in their field, they are recognized, their word carries a lot of weight. And although, I mean, here, the offer you are making is higher than maybe your competition, if the person vouches for your technology and your technical superiority, then it can click in your favor. Time constraints. Establishing a sense of urgency by setting deadline or highlighting time limitations, thereby urging the other party to respond swiftly. We already saw this, where you are setting a time constraint, you are giving a deadline, a validity for the offer. So if they don't accept your offer within a certain time, the offer is no longer valid. So this tends to put a psychological pressure on the other party. Power and leverage tactics. So control of information. Selectively withholding or sharing information to sway the negotiation results. This may involve keeping specific data or details concealed until a later phase of the negotiation. So there are certain features that you're not talking about, or concessions that you're willing to make, which you keep it for the last moment. So you don't open all your cards right at the beginning, and you offer those concessions only if they are necessary. So this is the withholding of sharing sharing of information, which you do as the need arises. Collaborative tactics. Collaborative problem solving. Engaging in a cooperative effort to identify solutions that benefit all parties involved Emphasizing teamwork over rivalry, this approach can cultivate enduring relationship and favorable result. So as mentioned, again, this tactic is very largely used by Japanese manufacturers, where they are building relationship and they are furthering the partnership concept. They are promoting transparency between the companies, where they are sharing internal informations and helping the suppliers to improve their operations, reduce their cost, etc., and sharing the benefits mutually. Next one, interest-focused negotiations. Prioritizing the fundamental interests of both sides instead of adhering to fixed stances. By gaining insight into each other's requirement, it becomes more feasible to develop innovative solutions that meet the needs of both the parties. So this is the example that we gave of both the parties can have different requirement. It's not necessary that both parties are looking at price. One is looking for the lowest price and the other is looking to get the highest price. It could be that the other party is willing to make concessions provided, you know, their pain points are addressed. And as I mentioned earlier, the pain point could be working capital. So if you are willing to make payment in advance, I personally believe that, you know, I used to negotiate with many of my vendors, my suppliers, when the industry was giving, you know, asking for lengthy credit period, I used to offer them very lucrative credit period. So payment within 15 days, payment within 30 days, some time ago, I mean, not recently. So people used to be willing to make concessions as far as the price is concerned, because they used to be able to work with lesser working capital with more number of rotation, because they get the money back from the company quickly. And we used to make payment as per the payment terms, you know, without stretching the payment terms, etc. So you are meeting their priorities, and in turn, because we were a cash rich company, we did not have to borrow the money. So for us, the money did not come at a cost. And that's the reason we could offer the money. But in return, we used to get concession or discounts, which were much more than the cost of capital, which was ruling in the market. So in summary, various negotiation strategies may be utilized based on the nature of the negotiation, the objective at hand, and the relationship between the involved parties. Very important, objective, relationship, and we said the involved parties. Certain strategies are characterized as competitive, such as distributive tactics, while others are deemed cooperative, like integrative approach. And ideally, I mean, for long-term relationship, the cooperative tactics or the collaborative tactics are important, because the distributive tactics can be for one-off kind of transactions where you are, you know, doing a project purchase, which is a one-time purchase, etc., where you don't plan to have a long-term relationship, etc. It's a one-time relationship, then it's okay, where cost is really important to you. But if it's a ongoing long-term relationship, then it makes sense to have a collaborative approach. An effective negotiator possesses the ability to select an appropriate blend of these strategies, implement them proficiently, and modify them in response to the changing dynamics throughout the negotiation process. Thank you.